This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
That was little and a stop made by Allen, and the horn sounds to end it. Falling down and sliding the puck, and St. Louis wins it here tonight by a 1-0 score, and Jake Allen will pick up his first shutout in 56 hockey games.
Last night's Jets-Blues game, the hometown team dropping a 1-0 decision against the visitors from Missouri. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of Winnipeg Jets talk, 3 hours of NHL discussion. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by producer and on-air contributor Sean Assor, doing double duty this morning, and of course my regular colleague, Dave Minuk. Ezra Ginsberg away from the program. He'll return next Saturday. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. The Moose victorious last night in Stockton against the Heat. So one win for the junior, for the AHL team, one loss for the home, for the NHL team. Our website, though, is illegalcurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to Sean. I say good morning to Dave. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning.
Hey, Drew. It's good to, Shawnee. It's good to be here, boys. An interesting snooze fest last night, I thought, sitting in that press box looking down on the arena crowd. And Friday night hockey sometimes can be exciting. Crowds into it. Weekend's about to kick off. But it was a bit of a snooze fest between the Blues and the Jets.
It wasn't the most riveting hockey game, that's for sure. I recommend, I was in some seats last night, so I was able to have a few beverages, so it made the game go a little bit more entertaining. Just by default, alcohol has that wonderful effect sometimes on people, but it certainly was not the 8-4 victory that the Jets had about just under 2 weeks ago against the St. Louis Blues. I guess it was 2 weeks ago today now. It was the complete opposite of that, and you could see the St. Louis Blues team. You know, it's what happens so often. You have one game where opponent A embarrasses opponent B, and it's a high-flying shootout, and it's, you know, old-style shinny, and it's goals here, goals there. And the St. Louis Blues, I have no doubt in my mind, were embarrassed by what happened 2 weeks ago when Laine got 5 goals and the Jets won 8-4. And then last night, you could see their strategy was, let's pack the front of our net. You know, we're not going to give up anything that can be, you know, we're going to try our best to limit the Jets' opportunities, and we're going to put 5 guys basically in front of Jake Allen and run a 6-goaltender format, and that's what the Blues did, and they got their 1 goal on the power play, and as a result, they were successful, and, you know, the Jets probably were a little too cute, certainly on the power play, I thought, last night, because they certainly didn't lack for opportunity. But they couldn't get anything past Jake Allen, and ultimately it's a 1-0 victory that if you play that game probably over again and you put the same scenario in place, the Jets were certainly the better of the two teams last night. St. Louis did not do much in terms of chances or in terms of... I mean, the St. Louis Blues had one high-danger scoring chance last night, 5-on-5. The Jets had 6. Mm-hmm. Usually that's not a recipe for success. Last night, so be it. It happened to be.
No, and you run into a hot goalie. Jake Allen, I thought, played a really good game. A year to the day that he had his last shutout in the NHL. So, obviously, December 7th is a lucky day for him. He moved past Glenn Hall, I think, in the all-time shutout list for the St. Louis Blues, with 17 now in his career. And the Blues, TV staff were above us, so they were quite excited about Jake Allen post game, and they should be, because I thought he played a pretty good game. I thought he, you know, limited the opportunities for the Jets did get, and he made the saves that he needed. I thought the Blues came out with a game plan to be a heavy team and to really target Patrick Laine. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was clearly their intent. Jordan Nolan took that elbowing penalty when he went after Laine early. And the funniest part was I didn't realize Jordan Nolan was with the St. Louis Blues. Because last time I saw him, he was playing for San Antonio in the AHL against the Moose. But, you know,
he's
a big...
You were at the Moose game?
What's that?
I'm at a Moose game, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
then you would have seen Thorburn out there,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. But, no, so you kind of look down at this... At this Blues team, and you see that, like, obviously, I think it was Bortuzzo was going after Laine in mm-hmm. the first. So clearly they had, whether it was specific to Laine, just to kind of throw him off his game, And based on the five goals he torched them for the last time these two teams met. You're also dealing with the fact that the Jets had beaten the Blues three times already this season, combined 18-9 score. So you know you're a St. Louis Blues team. You're playing. You're an NHL team. You have some pride. You want to come in and at least and you're desperate for a win. I mean, the Jets obviously everybody wants 2 points, but the Jets aren't in a situation where they're desperate for the points. Well, the St. Louis Blues are absolutely desperate for those points. They need them if they want to do anything this season, whether they be able to or not. I don't know. Because you look at that Blues team overall.
Yeah, they're not a very good team.
They're
a better team on paper than they are on ice.
Yeah. Well, and again, I really thought last night that the difference was Jake Allen. I thought had I been choosing the three stars, he would have been my. I mean, he ended up being the first star anyways, obviously, because he was probably the best player for them. So I thought he was very good, and he was the difference in the game.
And it's sort of a good story for Jake Allen, a guy who has all oodles of talent in the world. And it's always sort of been the mental side of the game for him. We remember a couple years back, and we talked about it, I think, on Wednesday's midweek show, Sean, where he was left home from the road trip here to Winnipeg in exchange for Phoenix Copley starting and give himself sort of a mental health break. And he's a guy who just doesn't seem to be able to put it all together, and he shows flashes of brilliance, and last night was a good flash of brilliance for him and for the Blues, and, a 1-0 victory, and I think the Blues probably know that they relied a lot on their goaltender, and it's not a recipe for long-term success for them, but it was enough to get it done last night, and they feel better about themselves having been, really, like you said, Dave, pretty much dominated by the Jets early this season already, and even last year, if you remember, the Jets really had, and Patrick Laine in particular, had the number of the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, that's really, as much as we're a Winnipeg-based show and we're the home of the Jets here, honestly, once that game ended, all I could think was, good for Jake Allen. Because he needs a W. He always looks so sad. And a guy like you were talking about, Drew, just all the talent in the world. He was kind of anointed the goaltender of the future for St. Louis to take them to the promised land with his new roster, and just not working, kind of falling apart as the season goes along, not getting the defensive help in front of him. And I kind of just felt good for Jake Allen after that one, getting his first shutout of the season and first against the Jets and... Good for you, Jake.
And kudos to the Blues. What did the Jets go 13 minutes in the third period until they were able to register first shot?
Yeah.
So the Blues did a very good job of sort of not giving the Jets much in terms of time and space. They kept everything to the outside well. And I thought that's the Jets on the power play, Dave. I thought the Jets were being too cute. It was clear, watching that game, what the Blues were doing was collapsing everything in front of Jake Allen. They weren't going to let anything go cross seam to speak of. Wheeler, we know how he likes to get that pass into either, often down on the goal line to Connor and then back up to Scheifele for the one timer, or cross ice to Laine. And the Blues were not letting the Jets get anything right through the slot, which makes sense. That's what you want to do. But I thought the Jets were being too cute. They kept trying to do it, kept trying to force it rather than put it back up to the point. Bufflin's back. You got his big shot at the point. Let him uncork that shot. If you're collapsing low, that means the Bufflin's going to have an opportunity to move in a little bit off the blue line and let go of that big shot and sort of try and dirty it up. And the Jets, I thought, were too cute on the power play opportunities that they had.
Yeah, no, I would agree, Drew. I mean, it was clear that the Blues were going to play it aggressively, and they knew what the Jets game plan was, which is obviously either hit Scheifele or Patrick Laine, and they eliminated them for the most part. And I think the Jets had 6 power play opportunities last night.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and credit to the Blues. Again, Robert Bertuzzo, I thought, was excellent. He blocked Laine, 3 times at least that I can think of, and at least twice on one power play. I mean, Laine rips one off the post too. I mean, there were opportunities. Scheifele did get off a shot where he ends up going down to his knee, and you think, again, those ones have a tendency for me to become like almost automatic. You're almost surprised when he doesn't score. But so the Jets did get some opportunities. And again, your goaltender has to be your best penalty killer, and Jake Allen made the saves when called upon, or his post did. And the Jets, and the one thing about the Jets, Drew, and you're right, I think they didn't alter the way their power play was working. And, I guess from their perspective, with how hot their power play has been, when you have a top power play in the NHL, if it isn't broken, then don't fix it. And maybe they felt that eventually the dam would burst. And to be honest with you, the way the Jets have played this season, if I'm the Jets, I wouldn't have changed what I was doing. I would expect that eventually the dam would break. And to be honest with you, I was sitting there in the third period thinking to myself, okay, this game's obviously going to go to overtime. Because St. Louis, to me, to your point about the high danger opportunities, wasn't getting the high quality chances. And you know, to credit Connor Hellebuyck, I thought he played a pretty good game too.
Yeah.
I mean, the goal against him was a bouncer from the point that he, you know, was screened on.
And deflects in off of Alex Steen's stick.
That's right.
I mean, there's no chance. I mean, that's not, there's no chance on
that.
Well,
they didn't give it to Steen. It ended up being Parayko.
Oh,
they gave it to Steen.
And then they took it away.
They took it away.
Yeah.
So, but it did deflect in. It hit the ice, deflected in. And so, I mean, again, I thought Connor Hellebuyck was good last night. I don't think there was any problems with his game. So, you know, but again, it's one of those things that you ran into a hot goaltender who needed to play it, you know, the way he did last night for his team to get the W, and they did. And so I don't think the Jets are going to be overly distraught about last night's effort because, you know, it wasn't for lack of opportunity, and it wasn't that they played poorly and the Blues destroyed them. They played a decent enough game, and they just didn't get the results. So
yeah, you know, like yeah, that's basically it. I don't think. I mean, you heard the post game comments from the players and from Paul Maurice, and there was not that the panic button would ever be pressed in that situation, of course, but there was not even they weren't really apoplectic about the result or disappointed. I mean, they're disappointed with the result, but I think they know for the most part that game was how they want their game to look. You know, in the defensive zone, Connor Hellebuyck was the Connor Hellebuyck we had expected to see more often than not this year, the guy who had been struggling, but he played, you know, he played well again in Brooklyn against the Islanders, and now he's played two straight games pretty well. And I mean, even that third period against the Rangers where he, you know, to allow the Jets to come back. So he's getting his game sort of rounding back into form, at least right now. One of those situations where you can't get the puck in, you're probably a little too cute. And in hindsight, when they go back and they watch the tape, they'll probably say, yeah, we tried to be a little too perfect. Sometimes you just throw it on net and go get a rebound, and the Jets probably regret not doing that more in the course of the game.
Yeah, I think, what did I write here? In Paul Maurice's post-game comments, offensively lethargic is what he said. So he said a lack of ability to drive to the middle of the ice. So maybe getting a little complacent on the outside. Maybe the coach noticed that a bit. But, yeah, like you said, Dustin Byfuglien also saying postgame, there's a lot of good things the team can take from this. So,
well, when you score 8 goals against an opponent, like they did the last time you play the Blues, you probably think it's going to be that easy every time.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah.
And you probably don't necessarily, you probably think that you're going to be a little bit Harlem Globetrotter-ish, and you can keep you can put the puck on a string and do it that way, as opposed to having to drive to the dirty areas and having to go to where it's more difficult, you know, to score, as opposed to keeping everything on the outside. Because last time you played them, well, everything you shot from went in the net.
Well, every time. They hadn't scored less than 5 goals a game since playing the Blues this season. So you're entering that game thinking point night, boys.
Yeah, and then the Blues, you know, we talked about it on Wednesday, Sean. We talked about just the mentality of the Blues entering the game, that there was a sour taste in their mouth, and you don't wipe away a game where you give up 8 goals and a game where you give up 5 goals to a player easily. So the Blues definitely had a burr in their saddle. Mm-hmm. And you saw it in, you know, the manner in which they played that game. They just shut everything down, and they were able to do it against the Jets for that 60 minutes last night. It'll be interesting, though. The Jets, of course, have to bounce back quickly. They have a turnaround on Sunday against another struggling Flyers team. A lot of people looked at this homestand where you have St. Louis, and then you have Philadelphia, and then you have Chicago, and then you have Edmonton, and then you have Chicago again. So not all of them are at home, that one game back in Chicago.
Yeah.
But you had 5 games in a row against struggling teams who had all replaced their coach relatively recently, and people thought, okay, here the Jets are going to go on they're going to get a 7-8-9 game winning streak as a result. Well, obviously that's not going to happen now because they lost last night, but you have to pick it right back up against the Flyers on Sunday and get back onto your winning ways.
Well, let me tell you something. The so-called coach's bounce has not worked for most of those coaches. I believe the only one who has a winning record is Ken Hitchcock. So the coaching bounce that we hear so much about hasn't been able to avoid these teams being bad teams still after the coaching change. So the Jets still have that in their favor. And again, I still think that you take that 60-minute effort for the most part, and sure, there's things you would have tweaked from the game, but overall, I don't think that they're particularly upset with that game.
When we come back, we discuss Kyle Connor and what his next contract might look like, especially in the context of the contract that William Nylander signed in Toronto. More Jets talk up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Chance for Kyle Connor. Scores! The sweet hit. Short side power play goal.
Dennis, the shot is remarkable.
Dennis Bayak and Ray Ferraro were on the call there. That coming back from the Jets game in Vancouver a couple weeks ago where Kyle Connor is streaking in down the side and goes, real beautiful shot, top shelf. I like that call from Dennis there, the sweet hands of Kyle Connor. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, and of course you can also get a mouth guard there from Dr. Les Rikus, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Alongside Dave Manuk and Sean Asor, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Kyle Connor, gentlemen, going to be a free agent, a restricted free agent at season's end. Of course, a free agent with no arbitration rights. You know, he's certainly just under a point a game so far this season, 25 points in 28 games played, on pace to certainly better what was a very impressive rookie campaign where he put up 57 points in 76 games played. What can Kyle Connor expect to ask for contract-wise, given what William Nylander of the Toronto Maple Leafs just signed for after holding out until just about December, until almost the end of the time frame on December 1st?
Well, I mean, if you look at those two players, they've got fairly comparable numbers. And so you have to think that Kyle Connor is going to be asking the Jets to back up a brink load of money in the truck and just deposit it at his door. Because, I mean, the fact is that Kyle Connor is an extremely good player. And the one thing that there were a lot of folks were asking after last season was, what can Kyle Connor do when not with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler? And, you know, Paul Maurice has praised the young forward on his ability to be a driver now of a line, not just be a complimentary piece on an already excellent, you know, with an already excellent duo. So you think to yourself, okay, well, you've got a guy who now gets onto the line with Brian Little and Patrick Laine, a line with when it had Nikolaj Ehlers, didn't necessarily have the best chemistry. And now all of a sudden that line gets going and you see Kyle Connor helping that line out. And we saw obviously what Patrick Laine was able to do in the month of November. And a lot of that success is obviously the result of what Patrick Laine did. But you have to attribute part of that to Kyle Connor. I mean, the guy has elevated his game. And you know, again, I'm someone who watched all of his games with the Moose. I watched him in college. I've seen his development. And to be honest with you, like, his game has developed to somewhere already that I didn't anticipate it getting to at this point in his career. Like, he is a guy who's obviously, as fans know, they see his speed, they see his hands, and to me those were things that this kid possessed and you know would only get better. But to me it's his aggressiveness after pucks in dirty areas. He's not afraid to do that. And that's a really impressive skill that he's added to, or you know, one thing that he's added to his toolbox, and it's just another element to his game that has made him more versatile and really, in my mind, you know, made him a better player overall. So, I mean, Drew, you touched on it in your opening that this is a player who's going to hit season highs, most likely, at least in points and possibly also in goals. You know, he's on pace for around 30 as well. Mm-hmm. So back-to-back 30-goal seasons for him. I mean, he's a player that the Jets need to lock up long term. He was a guy you got to think that his number starts with a 7.
Well, I was going to say, so Nylander, of course, signed 6 years, $45 million, just a shade under $7 million a season, $6.9 million. If, I mean, Connor gets to that, and I mean, Nylander's coming off a year where he had a good year. I mean, he had 61 points last year in 82 games. Mm-hmm. You know, Kyle Connor, you know, like I said, had 57 points last year in 76 games. If Connor puts up a point a game or gets to that 75-point mark this season, which would certainly be better than Nylander, I mean, is his number potentially start with an 8? Like, does it, you know, could he go up to $8 million a season if he gets to that, you know, point a game plateau or just under that point a game plateau? If he betters Nylander's numbers, is that what he's coming to the table with?
I definitely don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that he starts with an 8. I mean, Davey touched on it, just how much his game has developed, and he's not so much just a complimentary goal scorer now, a trigger man, if you will. He's a guy that not only drives a line, but the work he does in the corners, the improvement he's made along the walls, the ability to protect the puck and spin off of checks. I mean, this is a guy who adds a tremendous amount of value at 5-on-5 and power play, and we've even seen him killing penalties as of late. And when we first met Kyle Connor at the 2015 draft, and we're watching the highlights and we're learning about this young star forward out of the USHL, I mean, we just saw this kind of speedy perimeter player, you know, soft hands that can get himself into some high danger scoring areas and put the puck away. But as he's developed, and when he was sent back down to the Moose, I believe it was last year, didn't have the best year, and the transformation that he made in those brief...
You mean the season before?
Season before?
Yeah, like 2016-17.
That was when he was sent down originally, and then he made the team at a... He wasn't sent down last year?
You mean out of training camp?
Yeah, that's right. So after, when he was called up again, it was almost as if we saw a brand new player. It looked like he had put on about 40 pounds of muscle the way he was.
Even though it had only been four games with the Moose.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. Like, Paul Maurice said it, the transformation was so incredible out of this guy. And a really interesting article that Eric DeHatchick wrote on Kyle Connor, I think it was about a month and a half ago in The Athletic, about how he kind of molded himself after the way Blake Wheeler drives and the way Blake Wheeler attacks his opposition, and different, obviously very different body types, but it was a great influence on Kyle Connor, and you see that in the aggression and his ability to disrupt passing lanes and get into the, you know, into the face of defenders and disrupt their breakouts. He's tremendous. I think it provides way more value a team than William Nylander. I would not be surprised if it started with an 8.
Let me ask you guys this then. We're talking about Kyle Connor and what his next contract with the Winnipeg Jets could potentially look like. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Do you expect, given the Jets salary cap situation, which is certainly to some extent perilous, especially having to get Patrick Laine under contract and potentially Jacob Trouba under contract long term, do you expect the Jets and Connor's representatives to try and hammer out a long term deal, or could you see the Jets going the bridge deal route like they did with Josh Morrissey this offseason? Now, they're different players, of course, but Morrissey certainly is a cornerstone of the Jets going forward, especially on the back end. Connor's a cornerstone of the Jets up front, I would suggest, going forward. Could you see them going bridge route, or do you see it being sort of a long-term deal that could potentially turn contentious like the Leafs did with Nylander?
Well, I mean, obviously there's, you know, both are possible. I mean, I think it has to work. Like, that's the whole point. These things aren't done in a vacuum. You don't have one player signed to a contract and it's ignoring all the other contracts that you either have on the books currently or that you need to get done. So if you're looking at Kyle Connors, you have to obviously look at Patrick Laine. You have to look at Jacob Trouba. You have to look at all these players that you either have on your books or you don't. And so from Kevin Cheveldayoff's perspective and the rest of his brain trust over there at True North, they have to think to themselves, okay, well, what's going to give us the most flexibility if we're a team that is, as everybody thinks, challenging for a Stanley Cup? So if we're a team that's challenging for a Stanley Cup, well, we need some flexibility in our salary cap. Now, the Jets are getting some benefit, as we learned out of the Board of Governors meeting earlier this week, in that the salary cap is anticipated to go up to $83 million. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're going to get another $5 million in salary cap, roughly, per season. And that's obviously going to give, you know, it's amazing to think like that you're like excited to be able to pay out more money. But that's just the reality of saying to yourself, okay, well, we've got a highly competitive team. We need to be able to pay the players what they're worth. Mm-hmm. And again, like, you can't look at, like, people will be like, oh, Mark Scheifele's only making $6 million. Well, Mark Scheifele, first of all, might be the biggest steel contract in the history of the world. But the fact is, player contracts don't stagnate. They continue to move up.
But Cheveldayoff can say to Connor's representatives, I can't pay you more than Blake Wheeler and his $8.25 million. Because Wheeler, you know, over a point a game, 91 points last year. I think Cheveldayoff probably walks to any bargaining table, at least with Connor. I mean, Laine is a whole step, you know, see what goal total he ends up at, and then we'll talk about that one. But I think Kevin Cheveldayoff has to say to Connor's representatives, look, I can't go higher than 8.25 because your player is not yet Blake Wheeler and is not did not put up over a point a game. And, you know, maybe Connor does at the end of this season, but I'd be surprised if he ends up over a point a game at season's end. So I think that sort of gives the parameters to which to work with.
No, and I agree with you, Drew. And that's why, to me, his number starts with a 7 and not with an 8. And I think, like, you can't, again, not necessarily to say that because player X makes this, you can't make more than him. But when player X is a better player, at this stage in his career,
mm-hmm.
well, then you can't make more than him. Now, you know, eventually you can, because you could say, well, look, I've done this, this, and this, and you have a history. But Kyle Connor has so far one very good season. He's into his second, you know, pretty good season now, obviously. And so you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, here you go. Here's your opportunity. Maybe to make your argument towards a bridge
mm-hmm.
that you say, okay, if you put those numbers up consistently for two more years, then you're into the eight. So if you're Kyle Connor and you're betting on yourself, watching your trajectory, you say, okay, well, I'll take a bridge right now because maybe I don't want to make, you know, let's just say 7 times 7, for example.
Yeah.
So I don't want to only make $49 million. I want to make $56 million. So I'll take 2 years, you know, and then again, mm-hmm. from the Jets' perspective, because they're going to have to sign Patrick Laine to, you know, 8 years, $10 million, whatever that number is going to be, probably more, then you're thinking to yourself, well, we need a little bit of room because we have some high-end players. So again, it'll be very interesting to see what happens with their representatives this summer.
Kyle Connor's dad didn't hold out on a contract or anything, right? He didn't leave money on the table in an NHL career in the past, right? We don't have to worry about
I don't think there will be a Michael Nylander, William Nylander dynamic taking place here. Yeah, Kyle Connor will do fine for himself regardless of what the contract comes at, but it'll be, you know, all of these negotiations. I mean, the Jacob Trouba one is still going to be fascinating, and that still, you know, hangs over everything this team does. Does he end up signing here long term? Does he get traded? That's another fascinating contract, and what's going to be certainly be a season and then an off season of fascinating contracts to come from the Winnipeg Jets. When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us, talk more about your hometown team. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Saturday morning. Good morning, Winnipeg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Sean Assor and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he covers the Winnipeg Jets. He's a good friend of ours. He is known as Chase of Dump and Chase. He's our good friend, Jason Bell. Jason, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Tremendous plug. I appreciate it.
That's basically, consider that payment for the next 15 or so minutes.
That'll do.
There you go. Jay obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets, defeated last night by a 1-0 margin against the St. Louis Blues on home ice. You know, despite the you know, disappointment, I suppose, in losing the game, I would suggest the Jets are probably pretty happy with how the game played for the most part, and would take that on most nights in terms of a 60-minute effort that if they play like that more often than not against their opponents, they'll end up victorious.
Well, I talked to my father this morning, and he just summed it up. He basically said, they played a terrific game, couldn't score, move on. They had just won 4 in a row, and they're not going to win them all. And I think that's sort of the attitude that we heard from sort of permeate from the dressing room last night. You know, certainly there was some disappointment that they couldn't break through and get one past Jake Allen, and that the power play was, you know, I struggled at times to gain entry and get set up, but they did on the close power play chances. I thought they did have some glorious chances to score and just couldn't. So I don't think that was a situation where the Jets played poorly. In fact, I thought they were pretty darn tight in their own end. And although, you know, St. Louis didn't mount much of a press towards the latter half of the hockey game, once they got up 1-0, it was just one of those games that you play well and didn't win. And there's going to be games where you don't play well and you do get 2 points. So you kind of think with a real good hockey team, you generate more points than you lose off those kind of weird games.
You know, Jay, if you want to be a team that's challenging for a Stanley Cup, you have to have depth. We saw that on the road with Nelson Nogé getting the call. The Jets' blue line depth has certainly been challenged this season. What did you see from this organization with those guys getting called up, at Cam Schilling and Nelson Nogé?
Yeah, no, they got great mileage out of those guys, in particular Cam Schilling. And I think that, to his credit, the one thing that we talked about on the road is, you said, did you notice Cam Schilling out there? And the answer was invariably no, and that's probably a real good thing. And that's I don't mean that to denigrate Cam Schilling, his ability as a hockey player, but he just didn't do anything that would have drawn a whole lot of attention from a negative perspective. And I thought he just, you know, I say he's a veteran because he's got a lot of pro games under his belt, albeit at the AHL level. But he just didn't really make any of those major blunders that you'd throw your head back and go, what was he thinking? Sammy Niko did a couple of them, but I think it was because he was, you know, at times there's a kid with a tremendous amount of skill that wants to make an impact. And I thought in his first couple of games here against Chicago and then in New Jersey, I thought he was he struggled a little bit. And then really when they got to Madison Square Garden and then also to Brooklyn to play the Islanders, I thought he really settled in. And it certainly doesn't hurt when you're playing with Jacob Trouba, who's probably playing the finest hockey of his career, or certainly on the road. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. He was a workhorse. He played big, big minutes. And so he settled Sammy Niku down in some respects when Josh Morrissey was that, you know, surprise scratch there and against the Islanders. And then Nelson Ogier was fine too in that, you know, when he did get pressed in that day. So, it was a tough stretch, but it's not unlike we've seen this in the past with the Jets where they have these injury rash of injuries. And it happened a couple of years ago when Nelson Ogier got pressed into duty and they were down to their 10th or 11th defenseman. So you're right, Dave. I mean, if you're going to be a team that wants to stay in the race, you have to be prepared for these when the injury bug hits, and then the Jets, at least on the back end, certainly seem to have the personnel to do it. We've talked about them probably having 8 or 9 NHL-ready defensemen, and they were all put to the test, certainly on that road trip.
You know, Jason, like just focusing from the back end to the forward group, I mean, talking about call-ups, Mason Appleton seems to be, you know, sliding in quite well onto that fourth line, especially with Jack Rozvik. You see some really nice chemistry between the two of them. I'm just curious what you've seen out of Mason Appleton in the four games he's played so far with the big club.
Yeah, and I think we really liked his speed sort of puck sense. He was a bit of a puck hound in a different way, but sort of kind of. He reminded me a little bit of Kyle Connor, the way that he pursued the puck, and he didn't at all look like the Mason Appleton that I watched really closely in training camp, and who was quite frankly disappointed with, because I don't necessarily think that I was anticipating he was going to push for a job coming out of training camp, but I thought he would have been at least in the mix, and it just seemed like he really wasn't, and he was destined to go back to the Moose. And really, I mean, that wasn't going to be the most horrible thing in the world. It probably would be the most appropriate thing for a guy who just had the 1 year of AHL experience under his belt. But then he comes in, you know, plays alongside Jack Rozvik, as you suggested, and there was an instant bond there with the two of them on the ice. They were looking for each other. They were finding each other. They were hard on pucks. It looked like the puck was in the offensive zone most of the time, certainly at MSG and when that those guys were on. And I think they were, you know, Jack Rozvik's a pretty responsible player too, but I think when you have Matthew Perreault on that trio as well, they sort of watch and learn from a guy who is, you know, obviously really struggling to put any points on the board, but is still dogged on the puck and is doing, you know, the right things defensively. So now I've been impressed with Mason Appleton and the Jack Rozvik unit, although they were quiet, obviously quiet last night and didn't have, I didn't even look at the final numbers after what their ice time was. I'd be curious to know, but you guys might have that right at hand, but it was probably
Rozvik was 9 minutes. Rozvik was 9:34, Appleton was 8:01, and Brendan Lemieux was 7:46.
Yeah, and that's actually even a little bit more than I had anticipated. So, you know, and they're pressing obviously for a goal, so they're those guys aren't going to get time, but even with 2 minutes left in the hockey game, those guys were on the ice. I think they had actually took a step ahead of the Adam Lowry line there just in the last 4 or 5 minutes to try and generate something, because they did have some deep pressure in the blue zone but couldn't score. But no, he's been, and again, you wonder, you know, is that going to last here the rest of the year? Is Andrew Kopp will return, and then they have a situation where somebody's going to have to be, probably go back, and it's, you know, again, we've got the Nick Batan situation where he has to clear waivers. We've got Brendan Lemieux who doesn't have to clear waivers, and obviously Mason Appleton does not. So, you know, the Jets will have a bit of a decision to make there. So,
Jason Bell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jason, of course, covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, another quality game from Connor Hellebuyck, albeit in a losing cause after he had that quality game in Brooklyn on Tuesday? I'm trying to think back now. Tuesday night, I guess?
That's right.
Okay, there you go. Are we now seeing the Connor Hellebuyck that we expected to see, or do you think there still is room for some ups and downs to his game this season?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting question. I guess we can go back to, I'm trying to think about Sunday's game at MSG, that was the game, of course, where the Jets found themselves down and they score three to tie it. And at the time at MSG, Madison Square Gardens, which, by the way, on a personal note, has the best press box in the National Hockey League. The sight lines are unbelievable. I don't mean they were feeding us or any of that extra stuff, which we don't ever anticipate.
Yeah, Jay, I'll be honest with you. I immediately thought, what kind of food do they have?
No. I know you. I know you, Manuk. I know that's where you went. But no, it's unbelievable. Like, you're literally watching the hockey game from one of the best seats in the house. Yeah. And then, of course, you go to Berkeley and on the island, and if the True North building downtown had a 400 section, that's where we were watching the game from. But I digress. With Connor Hellebuyck, I don't think in New York, at that hallowed hall of MSG, I don't think that he allowed anything soft. And the Jets were down, of course. And the numbers looked terrible. I mean, his save percentage would have been whatever. I mean, you guys could do the math. He had three goals on, whatever, 15 or 14 shots or something. But I don't think any of them were really all that soft. Mm-hmm. So then he plays, then the Jets storm back and win. Okay, he lets one shot in on the shootout, which is bound to happen. But that was a pretty sound effort. And then they go into the island. And again, I thought he played pretty well, pretty darn well there. Didn't really let a softie in. And certainly the goal that was scored last night, I mean, sometimes you bite your lip when Connor Hellebuyck is talking about his own game, because sometimes he tends to fudge things, and that's just his own mind game he plays, and that's fine, and it's just the way that he handles the media. But last night, I mean, he was true to his word, where, I mean, that shot was it Colton Preko took the shot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Preko who took the shot.
It hits, as we've now come to determine, it hits Brian Little's pants, I think, not Alex Steen's, because the goal has been officially changed, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, you're correct.
And so... You know, absolutely no chance on that. So this is a long-winded answer to say that he hasn't really let any soft goals in, which of course he certainly did at the end of the homestand and prior to that. And of course the goals against gets bloated and the save percentage gets bloated. So his numbers are trending in the right direction. I thought he was really, really sound in his last three starts is what I'm getting at. And that's what Winnipeg Jet fans are certainly hoping to see. And that's what the organization is hoping to see.
You know, Jay, my first question was about the Jets' ability to have some depth and come in and play well. But, of course, you can't replace players like Dustin Byfuglien, Josh Morrissey. Josh Morrissey expected to potentially play tomorrow. Dustin Byfuglien got back into the lineup last night. Just how big an impact is Dustin Byfuglien when he's in the lineup and he's on his game?
Well, he is. And no disrespect to Dustin. He's settling back in. I don't think he was a tremendous factor last night. A couple of times he did his one-handed wrap around the net, and it certainly brings fans out of their seats, but it didn't really accomplish anything last night. In fact, it was sort of symbolic of the kind of night the Jets had, where they did a whole lot of nothing from the perimeter, really, and just could not get into the real dangerous spots. And of course, the two or three times that they did, Jake Allen was equal to the task. So, yeah, I thought Dustin Byfuglien was fine last night. But on the bigger scale, obviously, they're a far better, more dynamic team. They're certainly a more brazen team, because they have big 33 there that can pick up two or three or four guys and, you know, calmly toss them aside if there's some shenanigans. So, yeah, and you want to have a guy like that in your lineup. And then as far as Josh Morrissey, I mean, it's pretty tough to replace 26 minutes a night, isn't it? And playing in all situations. And then I thought really, really did a fine job anchoring a power play when Dustin wasn't there, and has done that a few times this season. And is just so calm back there. And the first pass is always right and keeps pucks into zones when you don't think they're going to be kept in. You know, and I don't know if anybody would debate the fact that most observers believe he's the Jets' number one defenseman, and he plays like it on most nights. So, yeah, they're a far better team when he plays, and it was a bit of a shock to us when we watched him take the skate the other night, and then he wasn't in the lineup.
Yeah, Jay, before we had you on, we were just kind of spitballing ideas about what we feel Kyle Connor is going to get paid for his next contract, and we were kind of throwing out numbers, and I just wanted to pick your brain on if you think that his value maybe increases now that he's showing he can play on a different line and even drive a different line besides having, you know, the parachute that is Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele beside him.
That's an interesting question. Obviously, I mean, I don't think Kyle scored in 4 or 5 or maybe 6
I think
right
it's 5 now.
And of course, I thought those things happen. And I don't have any problem with his game right now. I thought he was skating pretty good last night. And, you know, he is interchangeable on those top two lines. I mean, he's a bona fide top 6 forward. So does that change your value whether you're a top line right side guy or a second line left side guy or whatever, you know? You know, it's just going to be so interesting to see. I mean, I think we're probably thinking that he's in that William Nylander money or a little bit more, but you know, what's his ceiling? Is he going to get 35 this year? He's sort of slowed up right now, but I really hate guessing on what guys are worth in this National Hockey League. It's the biggest conundrum, and what's confounding to me is that players continue to ask for the moon. Owners continue to pay. And yet there's going to be a work stoppage coming up soon because no one's happy with the situation. And again, I know it's not that simplified, but that's how my mind see it. And it confounds me that the money that can continue to be paid to high-end players, who of course drive the industry, I get that. And then you fill your roster with a bunch of guys at $650 to $1 million. You know, I think Adam Lowry might be the last guy in the National Hockey League that's a middle-class NHL hockey player. And yet there's going to be a work stoppage. So to answer your question, I have no idea what Kyle Connor's going to get paid.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. I was going to say you cover the Winnipeg Free Press for the Winnipeg Jets, but that's backwards. Jay, appreciate your time.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Jay, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Always have tons of fun when I talk to you guys. Thanks for this.
Take care, Jay. When we come back, we preview the Jets and the Flyers. They do battle tomorrow afternoon. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Wheeler couldn't get a shot. Wheeler takes it to the net. They score! Andrew Ladd gets it back. 9-8 Jets, 106 to go.
Basically, I'm looking for any excuse to play a clip from the Jets Flyers 9-8 game from back. How many years ago is that now? Is that 7 years ago?
Yeah, that's got to be at least.
Was that, it was 2010, 2011?
Well, no, not 2010, because there was no Jets in 2010. But
right.
2011?
It was either 11-12 or 12-13. But
no, it was the first year, I think.
I think it was the first year.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while. I mean, it's crazy how many years it's been since that since that crazy game. Still one of the most memorable games of Winnipeg Jets 2.0 and the Jets and the Flyers.
August 28th, 2011.
Couldn't have been August
28th. October 28th. Apparently reading is difficult in the morning.
Yeah, it's okay. You don't drink coffee. Maybe you want to start drinking some coffee.
Not ever.
Alrighty. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. And this segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated for over 30 years and been serving great quality home-style food since 1985 for freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your front door. Visit shopbernsteins.com. Like I said, the Jets and the Flyers, they'll do battle tomorrow afternoon at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. At 2 o'clock puck drop, another struggling team visits Winnipeg. The Flyers, 11-12-3 on the season. That's tied for last in the Metropolitan Division with the New Jersey Devils. The Flyers, albeit, have a game in hand on the Jets. I mean, this homestand. You had the Blues last night, bottom team in the Central Division, one of the bottom teams. Mm-hmm. You have the Flyers, one of the bottom teams in the Eastern Conference. In fact, actually tied for dead last in the Eastern Conference. You have the Oilers, a team that is, you know, average at best. I mean, the Connor McDavid show notwithstanding.
But they've been good. They've been 6-3-1 on their last 10.
They've been playing good hockey as of late, but yeah, they still are.
When you have Connor McDavid in your lineup, anything can happen.
Yeah, and he's playing half a game.
That's right. And we'll talk about his ice time, the ice time Connor McDavid's been playing, because it's unheard of for a forward. Relatively in this day and age in the NHL. And of course the Blackhawks got a couple times. In any event, the Blackhawks are, they've lost 6 in a row. I think they got something like 4 wins in the last 20 games.
Yeah, but hey, it's Coach Q's fault.
Yeah, I know.
Change that message.
Yeah.
Get rid of that Stanley Cup winning coach.
Yeah. In any event, they got the Flyers tomorrow night, a team that's been struggling, to keep the puck out of their net. We know about their goaltending struggles, 92 goals against on the season, and they haven't found the panacea of a goaltender just yet. So the Jets, a prime opportunity tomorrow to take advantage of another struggling opponent.
I think I read that the Flyers have had their goaltending tandem of Elliott and Navarrete for maybe 2 games this entire season.
Yeah, well, they're usually injury-prone goaltenders.
Sure, of course. But what I'm getting at is that that's not a good recipe for success. I mean, that's the one position, of course, that you really need to have going at some point in the season to hope to make any hay in this league. And I think that the Flyers, clearly on that back end, aren't able to get it done. They're not putting the puck in the net. I mean, 79 goals for, you're talking about the goals against, and their goal differential is minus 13. But, I mean, they have, I think, the worst, they're tied for the worst with the Islanders in terms of goals for in the Eastern Conference. So this is a team that is not putting the puck in the net. So it doesn't help if you're not getting the great goaltending, but it also really doesn't help if you're not putting the puck in the back of the net to give your goalie any support. So I think this is a Flyers team that has a lot of holes in it. We're going to talk to Anthony Sanfilippo, who's always a fun guest, the next segment. But to me, I mean, that's just a Flyers team that they're starting it from the GM. And they're working their way down. And I think that they're going to have to do some wholesale changes because, what are you going to do at this point?
The current mix isn't working.
Now, having said that, they've got eight of their prospects are in World Juniors, have been selected for the upcoming World Juniors. So that's a good sign that you have some high-end talent down on, either in the farm or on junior teams or wherever. So that's a good sign for the future for Philadelphia. But for the here and now, I mean, we've got
bottom 10 in goals against and bottom 10 in goals for usually is a bad combination of factors to be playing with.
Unless you're the Anaheim Ducks.
Well, unless you're the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, but what's the difference, though? Gibson's been out of his mind.
Yeah, I'm saying, they're getting the goaltending in Anaheim. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So
worth noting that it will be a second half of a back-to-back for the Flyers as they play at noon Central Time in Buffalo. So they'll be traveling from Buffalo where they play the Sabres this afternoon. Don't know the goaltending situation just yet. Of course, we can pass that along to you as best we figure it out. And, of course, tomorrow you'll know who the goaltender are. I mean, it's been the Claude Giroux show. I mean, he's leading them offensively. He's got 32 points in 26 games played for the Flyers. So Giroux's playing great hockey. After that, there's a steep drop-off. Jakub Voracek is 21 points, and he's second on the Flyers in terms of points. So, things just aren't going well for the Flyers at this point this season, and they should be probably a susceptible team when they come to Bell MTS Place tomorrow afternoon on the second half of a back-to-back.
And it's funny we talk about goaltending with the Flyers because we know how ravenous Flyers fans can be sometimes, and Carter Hart got himself his first professional hat trick last night in the AHL. So
professional hat trick?
Oh, sorry, shutout.
Because that would be more impressive.
I was that is really impressive. Yeah. We saw one goalie yesterday,
His first professional shutout.
Yeah.
So stoke the fire a little bit.
The Flyers goaltending tandem right now is Michael Neuwirth and Anthony Stolarz. So one of those two is going to be in net, and they're both, Neuwirth is, of course, a veteran who's been around the league for a while now, and Stolarz has sort of bounced back and forth, still sort of a young goaltender, but he hasn't really established himself as anything other than a stopgap measure, I would say, with all due respect to Anthony Stolarz. This is an opportunity for the Jets to get back to feeling good about themselves. Not that they liked their game last night. And so you would expect that they'll come out probably with a little bit more of an edge. You don't want to lose 2 games in a row to bottom opponents in the league.
At home.
And where the Jets have been so good on home ice typically for the last year and a half. So I would expect a more dynamic effort from the Jets probably tomorrow night and a more willingness to do the little things necessary to get the puck past a goaltender that so often last night they kept everything to the perimeter. I would expect the Jets to have more of an aggressive focus on getting to the dirty areas tomorrow.
And think about the matchup, the premier matchup for tomorrow. It's Couturier versus Shifley once again. No.
I don't think anybody talks about that anymore.
Yeah, that's just I think so, that's so played.
Yeah, I think that talks.
I think they're both good hockey players.
They're, they're both tremendous hockey players.
They're both different hockey players.
Yeah, we can just enjoy them both. How about that?
Yeah, I think it's but it is funny, though, because, you know, I think that narrative was out there for quite a while. And now I think people are satisfied with each team having a very good hockey player.
Yeah, each team has got a number one center or a top line center, and they're happy with how that worked out. Couturier, 20 points on the season and 26 games played, so... he's a guy who at first, when he broke in, remember, he never went back to junior, came in and he's just going to be a defensive specialist, but he was able to, of course, round out his game with the offensive upside. And so, you know, both Shifley, you know, they both have their...
They're both great.
They're both very good hockey players. Yeah. I mean, you can only talk about that rivalry. It's not even a rivalry. It's like Line A and Matthews. There's no rivalry if you play each other twice a year and everything else. It's, you know, you're both very good hockey players and each team can appreciate you for what you have.
Yeah, what does Kramer say about the stomach voice out of Jerry? So played. It's done.
Yeah. Hello, la la la.
It's a different conversation.
Yeah, that sort of took a hard left turn there I wasn't expecting. If you're Dave Hackstall of the Flyers, you know.
Let me tell you, the Flyers fans are not happy with Dave Hackstall.
No, but.
They are calling for, it was crazy. Like, I was just picking, you know, again, when things are going a little bit haywire, you kind of turn your attention to it because, you know, generally we're focused on what's going on with the Jets and the Manitoba Moose. But obviously we pay attention to what's going on in the general and the NHL as well. And you looked over at what was happening in Philly and they're like, well, why did you stop the firing? Keep it going. And so I really think that they were calling for Haxel's head as well.
I think they are. I mean, I don't think it's going to like, what would the point be of it right now? Is there a different coach that's going to come in and get different results from this team? It doesn't matter who the coach is with this kind of goaltending.
It's almost as if it's what a good opportunity to bring in a guest next segment and ask him that question.
Well, why don't we do that?
That's a tease.
Yeah. Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Flyers for crossingbroad.com. He's been a good friend of this show for almost a decade now. Anthony's going to join us next to talk about the Jets opponent tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number two, up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Sean Assor. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From crossingbroad.com, he covers the Philadelphia Flyers. He's one of our very closest friends here on the program. We're pleased to welcome back Anthony Sanfilippo. Anthony, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm a little worried. What the heck is Ezra doing in Arizona?
Ezzy's having some quality family time. I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but Ezzy's now a father. So the appropriate reaction is to just run around screaming.
Yes, for poor Winnipeg.
So yes, Ezzy and his wife are having some nice quality time away with their beautiful baby girl, and we're trying to do our best to hold the fort here. So in keeping with tradition, we bought 48 donuts to make up for Ezzy's lack of presence.
Oh, but all 48 donuts won't go. That's the problem.
Yeah, we're going to give them away. I mean, they're
okay. Because I was going to say I come on this show all the time because you guys ask, you know, really well thought out good questions. And I like answering well thought out good questions, but Ezzy, I mean, when you guys came down to Philly, the only question he was asking is, "Hey Anthony, where's the best place I can get a cheesesteak?"
Yeah, you know, that's the same question he asks here in Winnipeg. So he's pretty consistent right across the board. Anthony, obviously.
Been a fun couple weeks around the Flyers lately.
Well, you know, it's funny. We were talking a couple weeks ago when the decision was made to fire Ron Hextall, and obviously they hired Chuck Fletcher, and we'll ask you about that in a second. That, you know, we were thinking back, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago when every single week there was a Flyers story for us to talk about, whether it was Jeff Carter and Mike Richards and Dry Island, and every week the Flyers were making news. It had been too quiet around the Flyers organization as of late, so we appreciated that we maybe seeing some of the Flyers of old where they always are in the headlines of the NHL.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was getting kind of boring just sitting in the press box writing about this, you know, simple things about hockey. I mean, we needed some soap opera, and they were happy to give it to us over the last couple of weeks.
Obviously, Anthony, Chuck Fletcher gets hired as the new general manager after they dismiss Ron Hextall a couple of weeks ago. You know, Chuck Fletcher certainly is a good hockey man. He did a good job with the Minnesota Wild for a number of years, a perennial playoff team. But from my outsider's perspective, and maybe you'll tell us, you know, what the feeling is in Philly, it's not a hiring that really excites me. You know, Chuck Fletcher was good at getting the Wild to the playoffs, but he was never good at getting them over that hump to, you know, really being a Stanley Cup contender, I would say, year in and year out.
Yeah, and that's a fair outside assessment. I mean, but when I look at it, I sit there and say, what did Chuck have to, you know, have to work with Minnesota? I think he took over an organization that wasn't in the greatest shape when he got there. He turned them into a playoff team, and he was aggressive and, you know, went out and, even though long-term those contracts to Parise and Suter might not end up being great in years 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13, but, you know, he went out and tried to make the moves that he felt were necessary to be competitive and put a playoff team together in what is, as you guys know, the toughest division in the NHL and has been for a while. And so that's something that you can look at and say, well, okay, that's a real positive for him. And then if you look at the Flyer situation, here you have a team with a widely regarded deep prospect pool, with an excess of draft picks. They have every draft pick of their own for the next 3 years, plus a couple extras that they picked up in other trades. And they have the assets to really, you know, look at the next couple seasons and say this team can finally get back to where it was, a decade ago, and when it was a conference finalist in 08 and a Stanley Cup finalist in 2010. So I think if you look at it from that perspective, Fletcher now comes into a situation where he had not been before. And so he's widely considered a good hockey guy, a smart hockey guy, a collaborative hockey guy, which is a big thing, coming off of what happened with Hextall. And you tie all those things together with what the Flyers have at their disposal, and you're probably looking at a situation where it makes sense to have a guy who knows the ins and outs of general managing in the NHL and has had a modicum of success in the NHL to really take the next step that's needed for this Flyers organization.
So that leads into my question, Anthony, is will that next step be taken with Dave Hextall, or do you think he is on thin ice in Philadelphia?
I think that he's going to be given the season, unless things go really, you know, haywire and terrible. And, you know, there were a lot of issues here, guys, that I don't know if you got to see the expose that I wrote a couple weeks ago when Hextall was fired. Actually, it was last Saturday, I think I put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of problems with the way things were being run, and Dave Hextall really was not given the free rein to coach the team the way he wanted to coach the team. There was too much oversight, too much of everything was under Hextall's thumb a little bit. So I think that they want to give him a fair shake now. And that fair shake would, in essence, be the remainder of the season. He was able to, make a coaching change with his assistants, bringing in Rick Wilson, getting rid of Gordon Murphy to help with the defense. And he really is now going to be given a chance to show what he can do as a coach. Will that translate? Do the Flyers have the right players here to make that happen? That's to be seen as well. And that's going to be up to Chuck Fletcher. But Fletcher has said he's going to, you know, try and win with what he has, what's in place here first, and then reassess down the road if it needs to change, then it will. So Hextall's leash is certainly short. It's not like he's being given, you know, a new lease on life here. But at the same time, he's at least going to be given an opportunity as opposed to Fletcher just coming in and saying, no, I want to bring my own guy in.
Anthony, is there a vibe somewhat of an uncertainty around the roster of the Flyers with regards to a new general manager being brought in and the struggles of the team and potential change, on its way?
Yeah, I think so. I think that a lot of guys think, you know, we're all playing for jobs at this point, which, I mean, you should always think that way in the NHL, right? I mean, you should always think that you're one couple, you know, one bad stretch away from someone taking your job, and then you might not ever get it back. But I think that there is certainly an awareness now that it's a whole new lease on life, in the sense that he doesn't know you that well, you don't know him that well, so you don't know what his thinking is going to be. And if there were guys on the roster who were considered a little bit of a sacred cow underneath the former regime, maybe not so much anymore. I'll tell you that I really think that the situation with Wayne Simmons is an interesting one. I think they were pretty far apart as far as trying to find a new contract between Simmons and the Flyers. And so I think that there's a guy that very easily could not be here 2 months from now. There's other players that I think kind of fit that mold, maybe not as obviously, but I think a lot of it will depend on what the Flyers do. Since the firing of Hextall, they've won a game, they've lost a game, and they've lost in overtime. So 1-1-1, and that's kind of what they are. They're kind of a 500 mediocre team. So either they have to go one way or the other, and then Fletcher will decide as they approach the February trade deadline, you know, does he want to try and compete this year with this team, or does he, you know, move significant pieces to try and, you know, build for next year and beyond? And that, so I think that really the next, you know, month and a half is or 2 months is really will dictate what this Flyers team ultimately will look like under Chuck Fletcher as general manager.
Anthony Sanfilippo is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Anthony covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, you alluded to it in a previous answer. You mentioned the article you wrote on CrossingBroad.com, and I'm going to tweet it out from our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve coming up momentarily here. But, you know, reading the article, and I've read it before, you know, was the dysfunction in the Flyers organization between Ron Hextall and the coaching staff and maybe upper management more profound than anyone really knew about?
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, it got worse. I mean, so Ron was always kind of a guy who really wanted to, you know, maintain, you know, unilateral control of everything. And I think when it started, it was more so just focusing on the team and the you know, the hockey operations side and the coaching staff and the like. And so that was one thing, but it progressively got worse, and he progressively went into more of a shell and really closed off what his inner circle was. And he really had very, very few people that he trusted. And as such, he became a little bit out of control with his desire for control. And he would do things that would affect, season ticket holders. Like, they had a situation where they would put season ticket holder, one of the benefits that they get is, you know, kids can sit on the bench pregame and watch the guy skate around on the ice. And he would sit there and see, one or two extra kids that maybe were originally planned on being there, and call down and tell them to remove those kids from the bench. Like, those things like that just really, you know, didn't sit well within the organization. He, you know, people would try to, you know, come in to talk to players, like former players, and he didn't want them around. He closed off access to his team. He moved the carnival, which is the big fundraising event that the Flyers' wives put together every year, and it usually is in January or February. He moved it to November because he thought it was a distraction too late in the season, and then he tried to dictate what can be served at those carnival events for the players and their families. Like, those were the kinds of things that were just so outrageous and so not related to hockey. And it really made life difficult. And for the players, I mean, they were micromanaged to no end, as far as, what they were eating on their free time. They were getting in trouble for that. And Ron had spies in the locker room, in the team offices, who would report to him what was going on, even when he wasn't there. And then he would contact whoever he needed to contact to tell them to do it differently. And, you know, he wanted to edit video that was being put out by the public relations department. I mean, it was crazy. It was just so many things that a general manager should not be worrying about. And it really made for a lot of bad feelings around the organization, and it got to a point where they just could not let it go anymore. And I think the breaking point is that the new chairman, the new Ed Snyder, if you will, of the team, Dave Scott, who was elevated to that title of chairman probably about 6 months ago, would come over and start talking to Ron about how things were going. And Hextall basically told Dave Scott he doesn't know anything about hockey. That may be the case, but this is your boss. This is the guy who runs the company, who owns your club. You can't really tell him these things and expect to keep your job. I mean, you couldn't, I couldn't, nobody really could in that situation. So it was at a point where it had to change. And I will tell you, once the change happened, the sigh of relief that you could feel it. It was very tangible around the entire organization. Was unbelievable. And I can't tell you how many people reached out to me thanking me for actually writing that story, because I was really the only guy who put out there just how bad the dysfunction was internally, that had really not much to do with the on-ice product at all. And I think that's, part of the healing process is finding someone who won't be that way, who will be much more working with others and collaborative, and leaning on scouts and assistant GMs and listening to Paul Holmgren when he weighs in, or listening to Bob Clark when he flies up from Florida as a senior vice president, listening to these people and weighing all these opinions. I think that Chuck Fletcher brings that, and I think that's why they feel a lot better about where they stand today as opposed to where they were a couple weeks ago.
And, speaking of Paul Holmgren, what kind of influence do you think he'll still have? Do you think he's still going to have a major voice in the organization?
Well, yeah, he's the president of the team. He's not a corporate type. He's not with Comcast Spectacor, who owns the team. So he's still considered the president of the Flyers. So, yes, he does have input, but not in the sense that he's going to tell Chuck Fletcher what to do. More so, it's going to be an advisory kind of thing. So Chuck will come to Paul and say, "Hey, Paul, here's what I'm thinking of doing. What do you think?" Paul will offer an opinion, but ultimately it'll be Chuck's final decision. But I think that Hextall, when he was in that position, wouldn't share with the president of the team what he was thinking or what was going on. Paul has said that they used to talk daily when Hextall first took over. I mean, when he was assistant GM, obviously. And then when he first took over as general manager, they would talk daily. And it got to the point where Hextall would not contact Paul Holmgren except for maybe once a week. And even at that, he was not sharing a lot of information with him. So there was a real breakdown between the chairman of the team, the president of the team, and the general manager of the team. And that's why that change was made, and not another change such as firing the coach.
Hey, Anthony, I'm just referencing Daily Faceoff right now, which isn't 100% accurate, just looking at the Flyers' lines, but maybe if you can provide some clarity for myself and the listeners, why am I looking at Jacob Voracek's name on the third line?
Yeah, it's a great question. He has not played well, to be fair, and I give Hextall credit for identifying a veteran player who's not playing well and putting him into a role that, it lessens the responsibility. So there is that. But it's a great question when the team's offense is struggling beyond the top line, why you have such a prolific offensive player saddled onto a third-line role with two guys like Scott Laughton and Michael Roffel, who are good depth forwards but not going to score you a lot of goals. It really kind of renders Voracek a little bit irrelevant at 5-on-5, at least. He's still on the top power play unit. But I'm curious. Now, at the end of the game the other night, when they came back before losing, Hextall did shuffle it a little bit and put Voracek back up on the second line on the left wing, where he does his, he, even though he's a left-hand shot, he likes playing on the off wing instead. But they put him on the left wing with Nolan Patrick and Wayne Simmons. That line actually started to get going a little bit. They didn't score, but they started to get going a little bit. Voracek made the great pass to Sanheim, who was cheating in from the point and scored the tying goal. So you might have got a little bit of something there. Maybe you see him play a little bit more on that second line. I don't know. But he, boy, he's not had a good year. He's another one of the, we can make a laundry list of Flyers players who have not had a good season so far. And Jake Voracek has to be right at the top. Even with the points that he's scored, he turns the puck over a lot, doesn't play great in his own end, really has not made some smart decisions like he has in the past. And it could just be, you know, a 25-game stretch where he's, hey, you know, guys go through these every once in a while. And he could turn it around. He's that good of a player that he can. But I wonder if we're starting to see that, you know, this is no longer a good fit with Voracek in this organization. And you know, I didn't mention him before when I talked about Wayne Simmonds, but certainly in my mind, as a guy that the Flyers, if things continue to go negatively, could consider moving before the trade deadline if they were willing to take on some of the salary as a big contract and several years remaining. Maybe if they took on a little bit of the salary, that could be a guy that could go as well.
Anthony, last question for you. We know that goaltending has been a tremendous issue with the Flyers, I mean, for countless number of years now. But, you know, Paul Holmgren addressed it in his press conference. He basically said we need to improve the goaltending. We need to upgrade the goaltending. How do they do that? And, I mean, it's safe to assume that Carter Hart is not going to be the panacea this year. So how do they solve the goaltending issue for this year and then maybe next year bridging the gap until Carter Hart's ready?
Well, that's a great question. It's always a great question when you ask about goaltending, and it's funny because I feel like we're always talking about it, and yet I always feel like I have a different answer. It's kind of weird. Like, I mean, maybe this will work, or maybe this will work. They try everything, and it's still the same problem every year. I think that the one thing that, while goaltending has not been good this year, part of that has been because of injury. And you could sit there and say, well, gee, you know, who didn't know that, you know, Michael Neuwirth was going to get hurt? He gets hurt all the time. Or who didn't know that Brian Elliott, coming off two surgeries to his hip and his abdomen, was going to be at risk of being re-injured? And lo and behold, here he is, quarter of the season in, on IR again. So maybe the Flyers should have had a better plan coming into the season. But if those guys are healthy, they are certainly acceptable NHL goaltenders. I mean, Brian Elliott's numbers are not, you know, when he's played, have not been bad. He's actually been above average if you compare it to league average. So I think that the hope is that, you know, they've been playing Anthony Stolarz, who was a former second-round pick, really kind of giving him a shot in the last few games, and he's played decently. You know, I think that he's ultimately a good NHL backup. That's probably his ceiling. So he could, you know, get you by for a little bit. And the hope is that, you know, you do that until Elliott's healthy, and then Elliott can kind of help you. Maybe you go out and make a small trade for a guy like Anderson out of Ottawa, who's a veteran. I know he has another year left on his deal, but that's kind of like the bridge kind of guy you're talking about. Maybe that's the trade that you make to bring a goalie in here who can, you know, can really, you know, get you to Carter Hart. That said, Carter Hart got off to a terrible start in Lehigh Valley in the AHL, but his last three games, he's been sensational. He's won all three. I think he's got like a .953 save percentage. Really been good down there. So maybe he's starting to figure it out. Maybe he's starting to figure out how to play at a professional level. That doesn't mean he's going to be ready to go next month. But I really wouldn't be surprised if he's given a chance later this season in the NHL. Not to be the number one guy, but, you know, get a call up and get a handful of games in just to see how he takes it at this level. So you may not need a long bridge to Carter Hart if he keeps playing well in the AHL, but you certainly do need to figure out some kind of bridge. And I, you know, Holmgren, Chuck Fletcher is going to be tasked with, do we keep it in-house or do we go out and find that guy that can get us there?
Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. If there's one thing they can say about you, Anthony, is you're nothing but honest when you appear on our show, and we always appreciate that.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I'll always be honest with you, except for when Ezzy comes back.
Thanks, Anthony. We'll talk again real soon, buddy.
See ya.
Take care. Anthony Sanfilippo joining us to talk about the Flyers. When we come back, what are we going to do? Maybe we'll switch up the show plan a little bit. We're right up against the clock. We went a little long with Anthony. So we'll figure out something when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was a great interview with Anthony Sanfilippo talking talking about the Flyers. Maybe we'll cut that up and get that posted on TSN1290.ca and maybe throw it up on, we'll send a link out on our Twitter feed as well, just in case you want a snippet of what's going on with the Jets opponent tomorrow afternoon.
We didn't even get a gritty question in.
We didn't get a gritty question in, but
he's been busy. The holidays, there's a lot of gritty themed activity happening in Philly.
Yeah, well, I mean, gritty is
gritty is actually the best story to come out of Philly
right
now.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, if it wasn't for gritty, think about the firestorm that would be around the Flyers right now. But gritty apparently solves all of the problems. I think gritty is actually going to work on world peace throughout the rest of the month now to really tackle some difficult challenges ahead.
Doing a great job.
Doing a great job, that gritty. Anyways, welcome back to the program. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. I had an opportunity at last night's contest to shake hands with our good buddy Frank Zappia as I ran into him in the concourse at the arena last night. Always great to run into Frank and give him and his wonderful family some holiday greetings as he returned the favor. I said it to Sean on Wednesday, but David, happy Hanukkah as we're approaching the last couple days of the 8 days of fun of Hanukkah.
Thank you, Drew. Same to you, boys. Actually, we got very nice holiday cards from Dancing Gabe.
As we do every year, Dancing Gabe is a wonderful institution in this city. He's a real mensch, and it really isn't the holiday season until we get our holiday cards from Dancing Gabe.
Yep,
so big
nice.
Shout out to Dancing Gabe for those. Manitoba Moose, they were in action last night in Stockton to play the Calgary Flames affiliate, the Stockton Heat.
Yep.
The Moose victorious. I'll get it right eventually. The Moose victorious as they continue their, what has it been, about 2 weeks they've been in California for?
Yeah, it's a six-game road trip.
It's taken a long time. So they wrap up that six-game road trip this afternoon.
Tonight.
Is that correct?
Tonight
against Stockton as well? Yeah. There you go. It's a good thing you're here, Dave. Otherwise, I'd have no idea what's going on. But Logan Shaw.
You know, Drew, you can read about it in the little thing called the Illegal Curve morning papers.
Yeah.
There's always a note about the Manitoba Moose every morning.
There is. You are the Moose insider for no other reason other than that. But Logan Shaw continues his fantastic play for the Manitoba Moose. Registered a hat trick, not last night, but was that two games ago?
Yeah. He's got two hat tricks this road trip.
Two hat tricks in the last five games of this road trip.
Yeah.
Proving to be a real nice addition to the Moose since they brought him over and the Jets signed him to that two-way contract.
Yeah. No, he's been a really nice addition. I think he has 9 goals and five assists or something around there for the Jets affiliate since they signed him 10 games ago. So he's been a really nice veteran presence. I know there's some consternation that he would take some spots, but the reality is he's just a depth player signing, and he's been a very good addition to a Moose team that, you know, obviously has been decimated by the loss of players like Jack Roslovic, obviously not this year, but last year, and Brandon Lemieux, Nick Batan,
Mason Appleton,
Sammy Niku, Cam Schilling. I mean, it's crazy, and folks don't realize, in addition to the players that the Moose lost to recall, mm-hmm. they also lost players to injury. So you've got no Tucker Pullman. They just got Luke Green back. Last night they got back Christian Reichel and, eluding me right now, who did they get? Who's the other player they got back yesterday? Marco Dano. So they got Marco Dano back, who had an assist in his return to action. Logan Stanley picked up his second pro goal, the game go-ahead. And then the go-ahead goal was CJ Cease, who had gone 13 games without scoring, and that was his seventh goal of the year after getting off to a bit of a hot start. So, you know, the Moose, and the one thing that we really need to focus on throughout this, the constant, has been the play of Eric Comrie. I believe he's played 10 of the last 11 games for the Moose. He's been excellent despite the fact that, you know, the team hasn't been performing. They lost 3 games in a row prior to last night. So this is a Moose team that, you know, doesn't have a lot. The only consistency right now really is in net, and Eric Comrie has been excellent this season. So that's a bright spot. But Michael Spacek, his development continues. He's kind of that forgotten player in the 2015 draft, mm-hmm. along with Jansen Harkins, obviously, that's still within the organization. But he's a nice player who continues to develop within the AHL, and that's where he probably should be for right now. And you know what? It's a long season, but they got back Nelson Noje last night, obviously, who was sent back from the Jets. And, you know, with Josh Morrissey expected to return to health tomorrow, you've got a player that in Cam Schilling who's probably going to get returned. And then, you know, we'll see what happens with Sammy Niku, obviously, if he becomes, obviously, he's going to be out over Josh Morrissey, but the question is now when Joe Morrow comes back, what do you do? And then do you send Sammy Niku down as opposed to allowing him to kind of waste his time, right? You got, because you got to have these guys playing. We saw Sammy from that long break, that long thing of inactivity.
That's why I wouldn't be shocked when Morrissey comes back tomorrow if Nikku actually gets sent down as opposed to Schilling. Keep, you know, you want Nikku continuing to play for the Moose. Schilling up in the press box, if he's your seventh defenseman for the Jets, it's not such a big deal because, you know, he's a veteran guy. You know, he's okay.
Who's proven that he can play.
That's right. Who can come in and out of the lineup, and it's less detrimental than a guy like Nikku, who you still want to see him develop game after game after game.
And it's funny because, like, people were kind of like, I've seen Cam obviously play because I watched the Moose games, but the funny thing is, like, he's completely able to be in that, you know, seventh spot, or if need be, like a sixth man, you know, in the defensive unit. So I agree with you, Drew. I think that's definitely a possibility, but we'll see what they decide to do.
The Moose wrap up the road trip tonight in Stockton to play the Heat. Coverage of the Moose Heat game will be at 7:45 Central Time with the pregame show at that point in time, and then Mitch Peacock on the call with Puck Drop at 8:00 Central Time. When we come back, we talk about the new addition to the Winnipeg sports scene, potentially, that being the Kootenay Ice in the Western Hockey League returning to Winnipeg. We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.